My name is Amanda Jones, and my book is titled That Librarian: The Fight Against Book Banning in America.
When Amanda Jones attended the Livingston Parish Library Board of Control meeting on July 19, 2022, she thought she would speak up against censorship, explain with reason the processes used by professional librarians, and continue with life. What she wasn't expecting was a targeted smear campaign against her on social media. I recently spoke with Amanda Jones, who explains how that day changed her life. And a warning, if you have kids nearby, be aware this contains content that may not be suitable for everyone. I'm Beth Golay from KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. This is Marginalia. Okay, so I'd like to clarify for our listeners. In Louisiana, a parish is like a county, yes?
Yes, same thing, just we're the only state that is called parishes instead of counties.
So tell us what happened on July 19th, 2022 at the Livingston Parish Library Board of Control meeting.
I went as a resident to that Library Board of Control meeting, and there was something on the agenda that said book content and signage, and that's all it said. There was no explanation. And there had been chatter in a local Facebook group about everybody needed to be at the library board meeting. And there was a page from a book out of context, and it just had a page, and it was like, everybody needs to be there. And so I saw book signage and content on the agenda. So I went and I spoke and just gave a general speech about censorship. And I said, I hope this isn't what we're about to be facing. But I gave my speech and I quoted, you know, like the Trevor Project and the American Library Association. And at the end of it, what I said was, I was raised to believe that God is love, but in our community, it seems to be God is love only if you're of the same beliefs system. And I guess that didn't go over well. There were no books banned at that meeting. We have yet to have a book banned. We have fought for 2 years and we haven't had one banned, but there have been plenty of censorship attempts. But yeah, no books were censored that night. And we thought everything was great until 4 days later.
What happened 4 days later?
I've lived in this parish my entire life. So I went as a resident, but I am a school librarian. And I did mention that I was the 2021 School Librarian of the Year by Library Journal. But 4 days later, I woke up to a targeted smear campaign against my reputation. And one page posted a picture of me and it had a circle that looked like a target around my face. And it said, why is this person, and they listed my whole name, pushing, want to give six-year-olds pornography and erotica. And another page posted a picture that they had taken from my professional website, and they made a meme that said my first, maiden, and last name, and said that I advocate the teaching of anal sex to 11-year-olds. And that was circulated hundreds and thousands of times in my community.
So you begin each chapter with an epigraph. And while the first was the death threat that you received after speaking at that meeting, the second was more inspirational. It was a quote by Martin Luther King Jr. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. And you wrote that when you first told your daughter about this smear campaign on social media that people were taking out against you, she told you that it was bullying and asked what you were going to do about it. What are some of the things you quote unquote, did about it? And how did writing this book become one of them?
I have filed 3 separate police reports for death threats and online harassment, and nothing has been done about it. When I saw that nothing was going to be done about it, I went to the next step and I filed a lawsuit. And the local judge dismissed the court case and said, it's their opinions that I teach 11-year-olds how to perform anal sex. And she wouldn't even like really listen. You know, she labeled me a public figure. And so I have to prove 4 facets of defamation and I can prove all, but she wouldn't listen and she just dismissed it. So we're still currently in a lawsuit and we just filed an appeal to the Louisiana Supreme Court. So that's the stage I'm at on that. I was in the middle of all the first round of the court issues. They were still posting things about me. I had enough. And so I entered therapy. And my therapist was telling me that I needed to write my thoughts down. And it just so happened that I was approached by Anton Mueller from Bloomsbury. And he said, "Hey, have you ever thought about writing a book? I just heard you on the New York Times first person podcast." And I said, "Well, not really, but I've been writing down my thoughts." And actually, the day before, I'd actually gotten an agent completely by accident. And so it just kind of snowballed. But I ended up having to take a leave of absence from work for panic attacks. And my health got so bad. I lost 50 pounds and was severely anemic. It just kind of snowballed into I had to have an emergency hysterectomy, and I was in and out of the hospital for 2 months. So while I was just sitting at home, I said, "Okay, I'll write a book. They are going to publish it for me, and I'll write it." So once I signed the contract, I had to.
So you attended that meeting as a resident, but as you said, you were the 2021 School Library Journal National Librarian of the Year, which is not nothing. Can you explain to our listeners the resources librarians use, like Kirkus and Booklist and School Library Journal and Publishers Weekly, to build library collections?
Yes, and that's something, I really try to explain in my book because a lot of people don't understand about collection development policies. So all libraries have collection development policies, or they should. And they look a little different if you're at a school or at a public library, but we have a collection development policy that tells us what are the parameters for our collection, what type of materials should we be ordering and all of that. And usually the requirements of a good solid collection development policy is to use professional journal reviews. So I would use Kirkus and Booklist and School Library Journal and Library Journal, and I would read those reviews to see, what is the book about? And usually they'll recommend, like, this is recommended for ages 9 to 12, or this is recommended for grades 3 through 6. And that's how I'll know if it's professionally reviewed for my age of students. I'll get those books in the collection if it's one the kids want, if it's been professionally reviewed for that age group. And in public libraries, it's the same thing, only in public libraries, you serve not a specific age range like in school. Public libraries are for, birth to death. So they usually, except for very small libraries, that rural libraries, you'll see that they're just one room and they won't be able to separate everything. But usually they're separate sections: children, teen, and adult. And those librarians will use those professional reviews to determine, where they place it in a public library. And then, of course, within a collection development policy and the reviews, there's also usually a request for reconsideration so that if someone disagrees, you can challenge it. I welcome that. I mean, I think everyone has a right. You have a right as a parent, and you have a right as a citizen to challenge a book. But just because you have one opinion about the book and where it goes, doesn't mean that's where the professional librarians using professional journal reviews have decided that book should go.
Well, just as these libraries should have standard collection processes and standard book challenge processes or reconsideration processes, they're not standard, are they? I mean, you wrote books should be considered innocent until proven guilty, just like people. Talk to me about this idea and why that's not always the case.
So books should be considered innocent unless proven otherwise. What you're seeing in some places, St. Tammany Parish, close to my parish, they mass challenged books. So a very, very small number of individuals, I think it was 3 or 4, challenged over 200 books. And they didn't read all of those books. They went by what they saw on social media, or I don't know how they get some of the books, like I don't know how they got on this list. And so they challenged it, but then you'll look at the consideration, like the reasoning for why are you challenging it, and they would write sexually explicit, and there would be no, not a single thing. I know Pride Puppy, a book about a dog that's in a pride parade. It's a picture book for children. They challenged it at my public library and said that it was sexually explicit. There's not a single thing about sex. There's not even a kiss or a handhold, in these books. So what you're seeing in some areas is that when your books are being mass challenged, they'll remove all of the books at one time and take them off the shelves until they can reconsider it. Well, that's a ban. You're not allowing anyone to check those books out, and you've determined that those books are guilty because you haven't had a chance to look at them. And then when you actually do get a chance to review, you see it's Pride Puppies about a puppy in a parade, and it's not, there's no agenda being pushed, there's no sexually explicit material. People try to confuse or bog down libraries by mass challenging like that.
You wrote that pro-censors like to post one page of a book out of context for shock and awe, and insinuate that it's on display for children to see or on a shelf next to picture books. And the public must learn to investigate these posts and find out the truth for themselves. Talk to me about that.
One of the more challenged books that we've seen across the United States is the book Gender Queer. And they really like to take one page out of context and they post that one page everywhere. And yeah, if you're just looking at it out of context, you might raise your eyebrows, especially if you hear that it's in a children's section, because you would say, no, that imagery should not be in a children's section. But when you really actually investigate, you'll find that it's not in children's sections of libraries. Usually it's in the adult section or it's in the teen section. Teens, not the five-year-old picture book section. And so they'll say, oh, well, you know, 16-year-olds are still children. I mean, that's semantics. You can get married at 16 in Louisiana, but you can't read, they don't want you to read Genderqueer. And if you take the work as a whole, and so many organizations have taken Genderqueer as a whole and talked about how wonderful of a book it is and how amazing it is, the book as a whole can save lives. You know, it can be that book that someone really needs to read. It's not in the little kid picture book section. It's in the teen or the adult sections. They confuse people on purpose by saying, oh, you could be looking for green eggs and ham and there, ooh, there's Genderqueer. And that's not the way it works. It does not happen like that.
So the book includes social media screenshots and some of the hateful comments you've received. It also includes images of support, and you included a letter from a veteran from New York who called you an accidental hero. How did you select which of these elements to include here?
It was really hard to decide which screenshots I wanted to include. I definitely knew I wanted to include the two originals, and I wanted people to see the actual screenshots of things people had said about me and said about other librarians. And so I just kind of narrowed it down and gave Bloomsbury several options and let them decide what they wanted. And then as far as like the positive, I've gotten over 1,000 positive messages of support. And that was really hard to decide which phrases and shots and things I wanted to use. But I knew the minute I started writing that chapter, I wanted to include the letter from Bill, the veteran, because when he sent me that, it was a very, very, very low point in my life. I had a lot of friends I found out were not friends. And that was what his letter was about. And it just really saved me that day from going into this deep, dark despair. And when I start to feel that way about friends who have turned their backs on me, I get Bill's letter out a lot. It really meant a lot to me and I wanted to include it. When I have friends that are librarians that get really down, I send them Bill's letter to pay it forward.
So among others, you dedicate your book to Judy Blume. And you also have a chapter about her influence on you. What do you suppose it is about Judy Blume that has had such a lasting effect on you?
Judy Blume writes a lot of topics, about a lot of topics that were taboo, especially when she wrote them originally in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. You know, menstrual cycles should not be taboo. She wrote book Iggy's House about, you know, racism and starring Sally J. Friedman as herself about anti-Semitism in World War II. But they're books for children. And so I think that she writes them very well for children to understand these difficult topics. And I read her books when I was 9, 10, 11. I will fully say that Judy Blume helped me become a more empathetic human being. I am a better person for reading her books at such a young age and learning to put myself in other people's shoes. That was Judy. I mean, I had great parents too, but that was Judy Blume. And I, you know, I think I've watched some documentaries about her and read other things. A lot of people feel the way I do about her. And so I'm just grateful that she wrote about tough topics. She got a lot of heat for it too.
You are still working as a librarian. We had to schedule this interview in the hours after school. So how has your life changed since that meeting on July 19th, 2022?
You know, there was like the medical issues and I did have to take a medical leave. And but as far as being, I've been back to work for a solid year and it's nothing has affected my job. My students don't know what's happening and I don't talk to them about it. And because it's frankly not, they're too young and it's none of their business, but At work, nothing has changed. I'm still doing the same old, providing books to kids and doing the best I can for them. Outside of school, it's been 2 years. I still get called names. I still have people record me and take pictures. I don't go out in public as much as I did pre-2022. It is what it is. In my community, some people think I'm the devil and some people think I'm great. But outside of my community, it has been amazing. You know, I go to a lot of book conferences, librarian conferences, and people are so nice and so supportive outside of my community.
You mentioned librarian conferences, and I was reading an update online about the court case, which I'll ask about in a moment. But I want to ask you about something that was included in that same post. And it was a bill in the Louisiana legislature, HB 777, that was filed by your own Louisiana state representative and sought to punish librarians who attended an ALA conference, that's American Library Association, for professional development, with up to 2 years of hard labor in prison as a punishment?
Yes, that made national headlines, and it was too late to go in my book because I did write about her. I wrote about her in my book. She was my former school board representative, and I counted her as a friend, and I do not anymore. And I worked through my feelings in my book about her. But yeah, she filed HB 777, and I am very proud to say that I am part of a coalition that defeated that bill. There were hundreds of us, but I helped. Round, I took it personal. I took it personal, and we collectively sent over as a coalition, Louisiana Citizens Against Censorship, 44,000 emails to our legislature about the anti-library bills. I worked really hard to help defeat that bill because I took it personal, and it's just, it's crazy town USA to me. It's just nuts to me to want to put librarians in prison for attending their professional development conferences. And she'll say, oh, it's only if they use public funds. Well, that's public librarians are sent to learn for their institutions. School librarians are sent to ours to learn to help better our schools. And now you want to put me in prison for 2 years for that? And to have the representative who filed it be my former friend, it's still heartbreaking. And I try not to think about it because it's very hurtful.
Back to your case, because you did file a defamation case against these attackers. And it's my understanding that
Yes.
your attorney filed the paperwork to take your case to the Louisiana Supreme Court, and you're seeking the right to bring your defamers to court and have your case heard by a jury of your peers.
Yes, I'm still just fighting the right to have a trial. I think I deserve to bring these two men in front of a jury of my peers and have the jury decide. But the judge dismissed it. And I'll tell you, I'm not asking for lots of money. I'm asking for $1 and an apology. That's all I'm asking for. And the way they twist it, they go online a lot and they'll twist it, and they have twisted it into it's this like this righteous court case about books and banning. It's a defamation lawsuit. It's not a case about book banning. It's a defamation suit. They could give me a dollar and apology tomorrow and I'd drop it, but they don't. They know they were wrong. They know what they've done. I mean, they were posting, it takes 20 years to build a reputation and 5 to dismantle it or ruin it. They knew what they were doing and they don't want to admit it. It would save us all a lot of money and heartache if they just apologize, but they're not. And so it is what it is. And maybe I'll win and maybe I won't, but I stood up for myself and I taught my daughter to stand up for herself, and I'm going to see it through all the way to the end.
What do you hope readers will take away from this book?
It depends on the reader. If it's a librarian that hasn't been harassed, I hope they take from it to think about it and prepare themselves in case it does happen to them. If it's librarians who have been attacked, I hope they feel a little less alone. What I really want is my community to see my story and see the truth. But also, I think what I wrote about in my book is about different, I included my story and but I also collection development and how libraries work and our associations and things like that. For the average citizen that doesn't under, that has never been, they don't have a library science degree, so they don't know. For the average citizen, everyday citizen to understand what's happening and to know that they need to stop believing everything they see on social media, especially about librarians and libraries and books.
Well, the book is That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America. Amanda Jones, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Amanda Jones, author of the book, That Librarian, The Fight Against Book Banning in America, which was published by Bloomsbury. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.